This podcast episode is made possible by wowdigital.com, your trusted partner for nonprofit and charity website and design.
Tune in as we join forces with Alex Sharfin. We're unveiling must-know strategies for nonprofits, blending business savvy with mission-driven success. This episode is a nonprofit game changer that you cannot afford to miss. Welcome to the Nonprofit Digital Success Podcast. I'm your host, David, and today we have a remarkable, amazing, I'm super excited that he's here with us, Alex Sharfin. Alex is an influential entrepreneur and author recognized for his expertise in entrepreneurial personality type, EPT. So starting his business journey at a young age, he made significant strides in real estate, particularly during the 2008 economic downturn. His innovative CDPE process was crucial in hastening the recovery from the U.S. foreclosure crisis. Alex is known for his book as well, The Entrepreneurial Personality Type, and is a respected voice in the entrepreneurial community, sharing his insights on various global platforms. I've been following Alex for a few years. He's super insightful. And the reason that I want to have him and come onto the show today is because, and you've probably heard me say this a few times, you need to run your nonprofit like you are a business. Somebody at some point, the founder of your nonprofit, maybe it's you if you're listening, you started this journey out of a place of somewhere really good that you wanted to create positive impact on the world in one way, shape, or another. Entrepreneurial spirit is right there. Alex, thank you so much for joining on the show today.
David, thanks for such an awesome introduction. I appreciate you having me, man.
No problem at all. So when we think about nonprofit leadership, how can understanding the entrepreneurial personality type enhance our approach to team building, maybe organizational development?
You know, I think when you look at the world of nonprofits, David, if we're looking at larger bureaucratic nonprofits, this doesn't necessarily apply. But if we're looking at upstart or innovative or entrepreneurial nonprofits, I think one of the most important things for us to remember is that what we're really looking to do with this organization is create momentum. And I think what happens so often with nonprofits, or at least my observation with nonprofits, is that there's such a focus on the vision and the effect and the future, and there's like tons of discussion around it and tons of excitement around it. But where rubber meets the road, there's not clear planning of clear outcomes, clear measurement, and then accountability for each person involved. And so I think what happens with a lot of nonprofits that I've observed is that there's a lot of energy in the ideation process. There's not a lot of energy in the actual implementation and execution processes. And I think, you know, when I look at a lot of nonprofits, they kind of end up getting stuck in that planning ideation place. And unfortunately, even though they have the best of intentions, there's not a lot that's accomplished, and things tend to take a really long time.
How many people have been stuck in like the meeting to death cycle? All right, we're going to meet today. All right, here's a plan of action. Next week, we're going to meet again. Awesome. What did we do? Well, not much, because we were busy with the work that we were doing. We need somebody to take charge, to be the leader, to really drive whatever that thing is that you want to do actually forward instead of just sitting and talking about it.
One of the frameworks we share with small businesses, and it's absolutely 100% applicable to charities, really to any organization, to any team, to any group, to anybody, any group of people who's trying to accomplish something. There are three things present when we're in a state of momentum. And before I go into the three things, let's just talk about what it looks like to be in a state of momentum. Moment, just so you know, that's my favorite word in the world. I don't just hear that word. I feel it. It's who I am. It's a part of my DNA. Like, I love to be in momentum. I love to be making things happen. I love to be like changing the world, you know, affecting people, making an impact, making a huge income. Like, those things are really important to me. And when we're in momentum as human beings, this magical thing happens. And when I say human beings, I want to make it clear that I work with entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial personality types. That's where most of my perspective comes from. So this might not apply for everybody in the world, but it applies for most of the people that are going to get involved in small businesses or small charities, the people who want to make an impact. You know, we live to be in momentum. Hey, David, I'll ask you, you're an entrepreneur. What does it feel like for you when you're in momentum?
I wake up just oozing excitement. I've got this idea. I'm very much an A-type. I'm very much like the go-getter. I think you need to kind of be in that zone as an entrepreneur, somebody that's like running the ship, CEO, CVO, whatever your title is, like driving that forward, whatever your position is, I, at an early age, found that like I had friends, but I was very much driven by what I wanted, not trying to like please really other people. That it's that, I guess, self-motivation that really like propelled it.
That motivation that really, for people like us, when you look at the entrepreneurial personality type, psychology tells us that we need extrinsic or intrinsic motivation, something that's external from us or internal from us that's motivating us. And I think our personality type just has innate motivation. We literally can't turn it off. And when we're in momentum, this magical thing happens. Like you said, you wake up oozing, like wanting to get things done. What I look at is like, there's really three places that there's this massive change for us when we're in momentum. The first place is physiological. Like we actually have more stamina. We can do more. We can go more. We have more energy. We can get more done. It's not like we're talking ourselves into it. It's there when we're in that place of momentum. Like you said, right when you wake up, you're activated and you're ready to go. The second thing that happens when we're in momentum is chemically, we feel the chemical change of momentum in it. Like it makes us feel like we're, you know, doing what we need to do. In fact, when I speak in large groups of people, I often ask, what does it feel like to be in momentum? And people give answers like yours, but eventually somebody says it feels like we're alive. And I think it's that simple. For people like us, being in momentum feels like we're alive. And it's not just physiologically and chemically, it's cognitively. We actually make better decisions. We see things more clearly. We see the future brighter. So when we're in momentum, we are boosted as human beings. Now, the entrepreneurial personality type is interesting because the second state of momentum is when we're facing resistance. It's this time in our lives where we see an outcome clearly. We can see the light at the end of the tunnel, but the world around us is saying, hey, you don't have what it takes. You don't have enough money. You have too much money. You don't have enough experience. You're too old. You're too young. You're not the right person to do this. But we stay focused on that light at the end of the tunnel. And we compel it towards us. We compel ourselves towards it. And even though the people around us are saying, hey, that light's a train, get out of the tunnel, we trust ourselves. And we move towards that light, we finally breach through it, and that's where we become who we are today. So as entrepreneurial personality types, when we're facing resistance, we turn it into momentum. David, have you been through that process?
Oh, absolutely. The world was built on people who are entrepreneurial to make things happen.
100%. You look at everything we're using around us was created by entrepreneurs. We are imbued by God or higher power or whatever you call it with the power of creation. We literally build the world around us. Everything that you and I are using today, the shirts we're wearing, the microphone I'm talking into, the screen I'm looking at, was first a vision in the mind of someone just like us. We literally create the world. And now the third state of momentum, and this is where people like us need to be careful. It doesn't mean matter if you're a business or you're following a workout program or you're growing a charity or whatever you're trying to accomplish in the world. When we get into a place where we feel full constraint, it's not facing resistance. This is the place where we feel stuck, like we're held in place. We don't understand our next steps. We don't know what we should be doing. And we feel like we are held in place. David, have you ever felt like that?
A little bit. Every several months, there's uncertainty. There's cloudy.
Yeah, it's so good that you said that. It was funny when you said a little bit, every few months, because every one of us is entrepreneurs. When we're confronted with this, we're like, yeah, I feel that. I've felt that. I know exactly what he's talking about. But it's almost like we're afraid to talk about it because we might catch it. Like that feeling of full constraint is so challenging. When I ask people what it feels like to be in constraint, they say things like it's exhausting, it's frustrating, causes anxiety, depression, frustration, all kinds of stuff. And then somebody says, it feels like I'm dying. And I think it's really that simple. When we, as entrepreneurial personality types, as evolutionary hunters, as people who get up every day wanting to chase something, wanting to make something happen, wanting to change the world around us, when we're in full constraint, it literally feels like we're dying. And here's what happens. That same set of conditions that is present when we're in momentum reverses when we're in constraint. So physiologically, we are exhausted. We have feelings of being tired and worn out and overwhelmed. And we have symptoms of things that they now call things like Hashimoto's and Lyme disease and chronic fatigue and adrenal fatigue, which are real symptoms. And they come from us not being able to move forward, not being in momentum. The second thing that happens is chemically, we feel the depression, we feel the frustration, we feel the anxiety of being in constraint. And the third thing that happens is cognitively, we actually feel brain fog. We have a hard time making decisions. Our vision narrows. We go into a fight or flight pattern, fight, flight, fawn, or freeze. And we're in that parasympathetic nervous response where we really don't make the best decisions. And so for people like us, protecting our momentum is crucial. Protecting our state of mind is crucial. When it comes to momentum and working with organizations, there's three things that you need at the organizational level, at the department level, at the project level, and at the individual person level in order to be in momentum. So when we look at a company, we want to apply this to the company, departments, projects, and people. And those three things are simple. In order to be in momentum in your life, and I'm going to give you a test so that you can actually self-discover that this is true. But in order to be in momentum in your life, you need three things. One is clear outcomes where there's a finish line and a destination. So like something that we can actually tangibly see that we're aiming at and we're going to cross through. The second thing we need is clear scoreboards. We call it transparency. You need to understand with perspective whether you're moving forward or not. You know, so often as entrepreneurial personality types, we get to this place where we're actually creating progress, but we don't feel like we are. And until we have measurement, we verify that we are, and then we know we're in momentum. And then the third thing, and this is important, is we need to have clear accountability. What are we doing and what are the people around us doing? And so when I take that framework and I share it with you, outcomes, transparency in the form of measurement, and accountability, knowing what we're doing, the people around us are doing, here's how you can test this. Think back to any period of momentum in your life. So David, can you remember a significant period of momentum in your life?
Absolutely.
What was it?
Last year, we signed on our biggest client ever at our agency.
Congratulations, man. That's awesome. So when you signed on that biggest client, what was the outcome that you were chasing that put you into this period of momentum?
The outcome that we were chasing was, how do we level up? How do we get to that next stage in the business? How do we grow? How do we scale? But not just scale in terms of, all right, more money coming in, but the team and the processes and the organization and the project management of the work that we are doing.
So for you, you had this outcome, this client come in, and the outcome becomes, we need to put new processes, structure, routine in place so that we really can serve these clients at a high level. What was the scoreboard you were using during that period of time?
What we were using, we were taking a look at the number of meetings that we're having. Do we go up or down on them? The frequency of them, the length of them, that type of thing. We were taking a look at agendas, these very tangible, very specific things that we can alter. We can adjust those levers and go, okay, we need more of this or less of this to deliver, to satisfy the client and to be able to complete the project and move forward with them.
Okay, so your measurement was a set of milestones that you were looking at and saying, let's examine these milestones, see the ones that we're checking off. It gives us clear evidence that we're moving forward, and now we are delivering at the level that we want to deliver. And then when we look at the last condition that was necessary, David, what were you responsible for and who was helping you?
I was responsible for essentially like oversight on the project as a whole and my agency and strategy with that.
And then the people around you?
So I was at like the 10,000 foot level. They were at like the 5,000 foot level immediately like below me, dealing with project management, account management, internal communications, client communications, and that piece.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is you had this very clear outcome with this new client. You had clear measurement in the form of milestones. You understood your responsibilities and the people around you understood their responsibilities, even the level where those responsibilities strike. Here's what's interesting, David. I've taken thousands of entrepreneurs through what we call the momentum equation exercise, and we ask them simple questions. What's a period of momentum in your life? And I'll share one of this not related to business. When I was 13 years old, I got into high school. I got into a speech class by accident. I thought I was taking one elective. It was a different one. At that time, I was not the most outgoing person. I was kind of the shy kid. I had a hard time with like being in front of rooms and stuff, but I got into a speech class and my goal getting in was like, I'm going to survive this class. And the scoreboard in the class was an actual scoreboard in the class that showed how you were doing and was hung on the wall. And the accountability was, I was learning, you know, speech from the instructor, Rick Lara, who's still a good friend of mine. We've known each other now for 38 years to this year. And then, you know, the other students in the class and the feedback that we were getting, the support that I was giving them, I got into this trying to survive a speech class. And what happened over the 4 years that I was in high school, I was in this period of massive momentum because I started speaking, I started winning, I started going to tournaments, started winning tournaments. I started breaking all kinds of records. And so for me, this very humble beginning of, holy crap, I need to survive, turned into me understanding that I could speak in front of people, that I could command a room, that I could lead a team. I actually became the team captain for the speech team, that I could go out and compete. And so when we look at periods of momentum in our lives, outcome, measurement, and accountability is always there. If you're in an organization now, whether it's a charity, a business, a team, a family, where you don't feel momentum, one of those three things or more is missing. You probably have nebulous, unclear outcomes. The measurement isn't something that people are actually looking at and paying attention to. And oftentimes people don't understand their roles and responsibilities. So when you put that into a company, everything changes.
I really love that. And I wish that more organizations would kind of take that approach to the work they're doing. Unfortunately, in the nonprofit world. You know, they're underfunded, they're understaffed. There's a lot of reactive instead of proactive attention to things that do come up. But it's important on a quarterly basis to do some strategic planning to go, okay, this coming quarter, Q1, Q2, whatever it is, we want to achieve X. What are the three major things, whatever it happens to be? Break it down into manageable tasks, assign that to somebody in your team to be accountable. Maybe it's you. And then every week, look at this thing, put it up on a piece of paper on the bottom of your monitor, a post-it note on the side of your monitor, whatever. Put a calendar event on repeat every day where you've got some focus time to think about that or to take some action or to work on whatever that thing is that you want to accomplish for the end of the quarter. And you're going to see that just setting these small little goals is going to actually get you there.
You know, what you said is really important, David. The vast majority of organizations do no strategic planning at all. And I know that sounds unrealistic, but we interview and talk to hundreds of companies every quarter, and the percentage of them that come in with a strategic planning process is less than 1%. And anyone out there thinking, oh, they're dealing with tiny little companies, like for our organization, most of the companies we talk to are around a million or multiple millions, and they still don't have a strategic planning process. What we coach and train is that in any organization, we need to have a clear understanding for every person in the company what's going on. And when you look at, you know, I'll use a sports analogy, David, but I want to be really candid that I do not follow sports. So if you ever ask me, did I see the game last night? The answer is I didn't know there was a game last night. But there's this analogy that just works really well for this thought process. Any team's locker room on the first day of the season, and you walk up to a rookie on any given sports team and you say, what are your goals? They're going to give you an answer in a heartbeat. They'll say, someday I want to get to the Hall of Fame. I want to win the championship. I want to beat who we're up against this quarter. Here's who we're lined up against this month. This is what I have to do this week as far as drills and practice and everything else. And here's what I need to do today so that I have a chance at getting to the Hall of Fame. When you look at most organizations, whether they be a business or a charity, and you ask someone, what are the goals around here? They don't have that framework. They'll say things like get a lot done, help people, make an impact. They might share like some part of a big vision, like impact a million people or impact a billion people. Sorry, I just was chuckling to myself because I've been a coach and consultant for 30 years. And I remember way back when people used to, I'd say, what's your goal? And they would say, I want to impact 100,000 people. I'm like, oh, okay, well, we've got zero right now. Like, how are we going to get there? And then it changed to, I want to impact 1 million people. And that was probably like 15, 20 years ago. Then at some point it became, I want to impact 1 billion people. And then recently I was at an event where somebody was asking, sorry to laugh. I mean, it feels like I'm making fun of this person. I'm not trying to, but they said, what's your goal? And she said, I want to impact 10 billion people. I'm like, crap. Somebody needs to tell her that there's not 10 billion people to impact. Like, I guess I could have looked at it differently and said, oh, she wants to impact everybody on the planet right now and the 3 billion that come in the future. But you know, that's what most of the time somebody will share in the question, what are the goals around here? And when we can duplicate that framework by having a long-term client-centric mission and annual outcomes and quarterly goals and monthly objectives that we're going to achieve, and then weekly commitments, what are the things that we're actually doing, and then daily productivity. Each person in an organization knows, if I do what I need to do today, we might get to that long-term Hall of Fame goal. And creating that structure in an organization is crucially important, and most organizations don't have it.
You know, there's lots of different frameworks out there for accomplishing this. It's the EOS framework, right, where you've got like rocks and then you break those down into like the pebbles and all that type of thing. Whatever the framework is, as long as you are putting in place a goal that is going to help you get closer to accomplishing your mission, you share that with the people, the team, the folks that are around you. You share that with your community, with your constituents, the people that are in your programs, are using your services, are on social following you, whatever it happens to be. You are going to achieve it. You are going to have support. You are going to have help. But start small, like trying to hit everybody on the planet. Like, that is super, super ambitious. We want to make our goals smart, right? Specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timely. Don't bite off more than you can chew. Start small, work forward. The next goal, make that one maybe a little bit bigger. You need to follow your path, your vision. It's great to be inspired by other organizations that are out there. There's lots of people doing really amazing things in this world. But what you want to do is what you want to do. And maybe your goal is to help 30 people in your community this year. Go for it. Do it the best freaking way that you can.
I agree. While there's a lot of frameworks out there, I think our company, Simple Operations, has the most effective and best one. You know, you mentioned EOS, which is, it's a good alternative. It's an interesting framework, but like you said, you really get it down to where you do 90-day targets and then you execute through a weekly meeting. And what we've observed in that framework is that what happens is the visionary, the manager, the leader, the person who's running the organization ends up way too involved. David, I think one of the things that if you're a visionary, whether you're running a charity, a business, or anything else, one of the things you should endeavor to do as quickly as possible is get yourself out of the day-to-day. Being in the day-to-day of a business, being involved in the tactics, being involved in the details creates so many symptoms for us as visionaries. And here's what I mean by symptoms. When we're too overwhelmed in the day-to-day, it can make us anxious. It can make us feel frustrated. It can make us feel resentful to our team because we're way too involved. When we have too much coming at us on a day-to-day basis, when we're getting interruptions and questions and death of a thousand paper cuts and we're involved in the tactics, it can actually reduce our capacity to be a visionary. It puts us in a parasympathetic nervous system response. It dysregulates our central nervous system because we have highly sensitive, highly adaptable nervous systems, but we also have to protect them from too much in the day-to-day, too many tactics, too many details. Like one of the symptoms that happens when we're stuck in the day-to-day is that, and you know, if you're a visionary that runs a business or an organization of any kind, you'll probably relate to this, is you wake up one morning, you find a mistake, and it completely destroys your entire day because you're the one who found the mistake. You feel like you're the only one who finds mistakes. Mistakes must be being made everywhere. And so, you know, I often have people on teams tell me, well, you know, John, our visionary, is really frustrated because he found a mistake yesterday. So he's been investigating everything for the last 48 or 24 hours and finding all kinds of issues. The reality is, as visionaries, we are not meant to be in a day-to-day tactical position. We are that small percentage of the population that gets up every morning, travels into the future, creates a new reality, then comes back to the present and demands it becomes real. And the best way for us to do that is to make that reality so clear that our team actually understands it and that we've fully communicated where we're going. And then we build a realistic step-by-step plan to get there. And when I say realistic, what often happens in the mind of entrepreneurs or in the mind of type A personalities is they hear the word realistic and they're like, oh, realistic. Realistic is what would have happened anyway. I want to chase this big, hairy, audacious goal. I have this massive vision. I want to change the world. Well, here's the issue. So many of us are teaching our team to chase a dream and to lose gracefully. And let me tell you what I mean by that. If we don't have the next interim step for our team to pursue, which is realistic and clear, and there's a clear path to get there, what often happens is we share these big, massive goals and then we fall short. And so we're telling our team they need to chase a dream. And then when we fall short, we teach them how to lose gracefully over and over and over again. And what happens is if you're always aiming at something that's huge, and falling short, you create a culture in your company that goals don't really mean anything around here. And what we aim at is just kind of something we think about or came up with, and falling short is okay. And when we change that paradigm and we create realistic outcomes that have a clear path to get there and our team can execute and succeed, we have a team that starts to learn how to win. We have a team that starts to expect to win. We have a team that actually becomes more engaged and gets more done. If you're teaching your team how to lose gracefully, the people who really care about what you're doing, the true believers, which, by the way, if you're running a charity, most of the people attracted to helping you are true believers. They believe in your cause. They believe in the mission. They believe in what the charity is going to do. And if you're teaching them to lose gracefully, oftentimes the most valuable people, the A players, the one that can help you the most, are going to bail out because they don't want to be in a situation where they're losing. And it's so crazy, David, because all the time we work with organizations that have had these huge pie-in-the-sky goals, and we still think you should have big dream goals. Those are your client-centric mission. Those are the future. But the 1 year, the quarterly, the monthly, those should be clear, and those should have a path to get there. And when we change this paradigm, we often take a company that's been stuck or plateaued or standing in place or frustrated, a lot of issues on the team, and we make a simple change. We take those pie-in-the-sky goals and bring them back down to something realistic, and all of a sudden the company starts growing. I just want to make the point that realistic does not mean slow. We've worked with organizations, tons of organizations that have gone from the low seven figures to the multiple eight figures by creating realistic, achievable, clear path outcomes in their companies. Because when a team understands how to get there, they're going to execute like crazy and get you there. If you're telling an entire organization of people, here's this dream I have, let's go achieve it, it's going to be really hard for you, the company, or any individual member of the team to feel like they're winning.
You know, we've probably all heard the saying, reach for the stars and land on the moon?
I think the saying is something like, shoot for the moon, and if you miss, you'll land on the stars, or some dumb crap like that. Let's be very realistic about that. If you shoot for the moon and you miss, you're going to die. Your life support systems are not going to last. You're going to go into some massive orbit around the Earth, or even worse, go into deep space, and you're going to die. You're going to become a popsicle. You're going to be a frozen person that's not going to ever like have any achievement in your life. And so I hate that phrase, because what it does, by the way, I know I just got a little emotional. Let me calm down. I get emotional about this because so many entrepreneurs have these patterns in their mind, like, I need a big, hairy, audacious goal. I'm going to shoot for the stars, put the biggest number I've ever had and write it down, cross it out and double it. The way we set goals and the way we try to achieve them is fundamentally broken. And what happens is you go to an event or you go to a conference or you go to something where you're watching a goal achievement expert, and it's somebody who bounces around on stage and motivates everybody and makes a lot of noise and tells you things like, write the biggest number down, cross it out and double it, do it again. That's your goal. And what happens is that process might have worked for one or two people out of 100 or 200 or 300. And that's the person who gives the testimonial. And so everybody's like, well, I guess this is how it works. Nothing could be further from the truth. We can have huge dreams in the future, but when we create clear process, structure, and routine to achieve what we want to achieve in the short term, that's how we get our life into momentum. That's how we make real, lasting, permanent change. And that's how we grow the organization that we care about.
100%. What I would like everybody to do is think about whatever level in your organization that you're in, whether you're, you know, the graphic designer, or you're a director, manager, VP, CEO, CVO, whatever. Think about what you want to achieve in a 5-year span. This should be personal as well. Oh, you know, I want to take 3-week vacation traveling the world or whatever, right? Or 3 months, whatever, right? But the business goals, what is it that you want to achieve? Then we'll look at a 1-year goal. What is it that you can achieve 1 year that will get you one step closer to hitting that 5-year goal? Then go, okay, right now, this quarter or this coming quarter, what am I going to do to get a quarter of the way to that 1-year goal? And be very specific around those. Make sure that you share those. So if you've got team with you, have your whole team do this. It needs to come also from the top of the organization down. You need somebody steering the ship that's going to say, look, this is the vision for the organization. How can we together, collectively, make this happen? And every department, every person is going to have a different take on it. And that's okay. But you can collaboratively come together to get to where you want to be.
Yeah, no question. I think the key here is creating consensus and alignment. I think the biggest issue in most organizations is that there is top-down motivation of what's going to happen, and there's not enough time spent on consensus and alignment. And consensus is making sure everybody agrees and understands, and alignment is everybody's going in the same direction for the same reason. And what often happens in organizations that don't have a clear strategic plan, don't have a planning process, don't have an execution system, is that consensus and alignment really doesn't exist, because there's nothing to have consensus or alignment around other than day-to-day activities and feeling like you're buried in your job. And so one of the frameworks we teach, and we can share this, David, if you go to predictablebusinesssystems.com, we teach a framework called the 5 core functions. And it's a quarterly analysis tool where you can analyze your business and see exactly what it needs. Now, there's a lot of analysis tools out there. This is the only one that we've seen, and I've been doing this a long time. It's the only one that I've seen where you analyze what does the business actually need to deliver to your constituency, your customers, your members in a better way. The 5 core functions of business are simple. There's lead generation, everything you do to create a lead. There's lead nurture, everything you do to nurture that lead. There's conversion, everything you do to take that person from a lead to an actually involved person who's either purchased or donated or whatever that is. Then there's delivery, and then there's retention, resell, and upsell. And those are the 5 areas. And when you look at a business, it's pretty easy to see that. When you look at a charity, it's exactly the same. You know, in charities, you're generating leads of people who might donate. You're nurturing those leads so that they will donate. You're converting them to an actual donor, and then you're delivering 2 things in a charity. The actual outcome of the charity, like what it is we're doing to do our charitable work in the world. And then I would also recommend you have a delivery of information back to all the donors, showing them the change that they've made in the world. You know, a charity that my wife and I were involved in, Charity Water, who's run by Scott Harrison, they did really incredible at this. They delivered the change, which was building wells around the world in places where they didn't have clean water. But then they also delivered updates to us. At one point, I think they sent us a GPS tracking beacon so we could see the well that was being built. And, you know, they sent us pictures and they sent us information. And so as donors, we knew that the delivery happened and they were confirming it with us. And then retention, resell, and upsell in a business, you know, is retention. We want to make sure people stay with us. Resell is people buy from us again. Upsell is that people buy something larger from us. Same thing applies in a charity. Retention is we keep that person as a donor. Resell is they donate again, or maybe they get on a donation monthly program, or they have something that's automatically going to you. And then upsell is, can we get them to donate at a higher level for an opportunity for them or an opportunity for the organization? I think one of the reasons so many organizations stall out is they don't have a consistent tool to analyze what the organization needs. And if you break things down in those five categories and you look at where are we weakest, that's where you put your energy. And then that quarter, the organization gets stronger. It's able to achieve more. Can you do the same thing the next quarter? And so again, you can go to predictablebusinesssystems.com. We have a short ebook on the five core functions that also shows you a matrix you can use for scoring that applies both to businesses and to charities.
I love that. I think it's absolutely spot on. And there's different levels. Like Alex, you and I were chatting right before we hit record here. Look, we know that there's a know, like, and trust factor. It takes 7 to 8 interactions with somebody, whether it's email or social or phone call or see a kiosk at a mall where somebody's like ringing a bell looking for donations, like whatever it happens to be. It takes a number of interactions before they know about you. They like you and they trust you. And there's different levels of the donor life cycle. So you have like the casual, which is, yeah, I'll follow you on social, I'll leave a comment or I'll share or I'll like something, right? Like the couch surfer type model. And you can take them through those five steps as well, from like lead gen, nurture, sales conversion. How do you drive people through that if they're just kind of like, I don't know, socially connecting with you versus actually giving you time? You can go through those five steps with volunteers. And then you can go through those steps with actual people that are giving you money. You can go through those steps with corporate sponsors who are giving you maybe goods or services in return for X, Y, Z. You can go through that with your board of directors. You can go through that with your staff in your organization as well. It really does play across the whole spectrum. Even though we're talking about business, this absolutely 100% applies to you as a nonprofit.
Yeah, there's no question. I think that the biggest challenge, I just want to be careful with how I say this because I don't want to offend anybody working in a nonprofit, but I think that the biggest challenge with the majority of nonprofits that I've been involved with is that they're not run like a business, and there's not enough accountability around outcomes. There's not enough accountability around measurement, and there's not enough accountability as to who's responsible for what. And as a result, a lot of the charities that I've observed from the outside, some of the ones that I've been involved in the inside, there's a lot of discussion, a lot of ideation, a lot of visioning, a lot of getting excited, but very little execution. And so when you go through those five core functions, here's what happens. You get very clear on what the organization needs. You start executing those things and you see a difference in the organization. You see movement, you see growth, you see more donors, you see more activity. And then that pattern of, hey, if we do this intentionally, we get results, makes it so that everybody involved wants to do it intentionally again and get more results. And so I think, like I said, I won't offend anybody running the charity. This is not a universal statement, but the majority of charities that I've been involved in, ironically, have been run by entrepreneurs, but they run their business like a business and their charity does not run like a business. I don't know what to compare it to.
You know, I think it goes back to what you started off with, which is the word momentum. If you are creating goals and you have strategy in place that allows you to achieve it, you can check that off. Be like, I made this thing happen. We were able to raise $3,000, $10,000, $5 million, whatever. We were able to help feed starving children, 3,000 of them in this city. We were able to build wells in these countries, whatever it happens to be. They're like, okay, you get that hit, you get that dopamine, you get that like little social media ding that everybody's talking about is like really bad for us, right? You get that positive feedback from chemical reaction in your body that you actually achieved something. Let's do it again.
Yeah.
Let's raise that bar just 5%, 10%. Let's push for that.
No question. I think it's interesting that you brought up the chemical reaction. When we create a realistic outcome, we do the work to get there and we cross the finish line, there's actually a chemical experience that we have that makes us want to do it again. And as entrepreneurial personality types, there's this weird condition that if we set up clear finish lines, as we cross them, they lose importance to us because we need to go back on the hunt. We need to go figure out what we're going to do next. And so what happens in too many organizations is that the finish line is not really a finish line. It's this roving thing that keeps moving away. It's like, oh, here's what we're going to do. But then we're going to add some stuff to it. And then we're going to do some other things. And then we're going to move. And so there's really no, hey, we've done this. We can celebrate it. And now we can plan what we're going to do next. So it's really important in your organization that when it comes to clear outcomes, measurement, and accountability, that the outcomes are actual finish line outcomes.
So here's a question for you. What advice would you have for a nonprofit or charity in adapting traditional business strategies, like what we've been talking about, so that they can align their team with their mission and their values?
I think start thinking about the charity as a business. And I know that makes people feel uncomfortable because the outcome of a business is profit and the outcome of a charity is some type of assistance or change or transformation of a cause. The problem I see is that the difference between how a business is run and a charity is run is why the charity has so many challenges and struggles and frustrations. And what I mean by that is kind of what we talked about earlier. Have clear outcomes for the charity, have clear measurements for the charity, and then have clear accountability. I think one of the things that happens in too many charities is that the person running the charity feels like everybody is giving to the cause and giving to the charity. So as a result, they don't hold people accountable or they don't create accountability. If somebody's showing up to help a charity, they actually want accountability. Same thing in business. A lot of times people tell me, oh, you know, I want my team to have freedom and autonomy. Well, freedom and autonomy is totally different from lack of direction and lack of understanding. You know, lack of direction and lack of understanding, whether it's in a charity or a business, makes it so that people are deleveraged. It makes it so they hold back. They don't take initiative. They don't step up. Like, these are the complaints we hear from visionaries all the time. It's like, my team's not performing. They're not stepping up. They're not doing what I want them to. They're not taking action. Well, oftentimes it's because they don't have the clarity to do those things. And so even in a charity organization, giving each person who's involved, each volunteer, each person, even if you have people who are on salary or staff or, you know, in the office, having a ton of clarity around exactly what they're accountable for so that they can succeed. You know, that confusion with a lot of leaders of, I want people to have independence and autonomy. And what they really give people is a lack of clarity and no direction. And people do not succeed where they have a lack of clarity and no understanding of direction. When they understand where they're going, they understand the direction, that's when people can get into momentum and change things.
But two things I want to add to that. Yesterday, I saw a quick little video about Simon Sinek, and he was saying, like, what is CEO? Like, we should abolish that. It should be a CVO, a chief visionary officer. You're going on a road trip. How do you know where you're going to go? Well, you've got a GPS. You've got a clear, defined direction. You know you need to go this way. All right, there's a road closure. There's some construction. All right, we're going to pivot. We're going to go over here and go around, right? You need somebody that can really drive the organization forward in that kind of way. And I think that that's really like the smartest way to move through the life cycle of a nonprofit, staying true to your goal, your mission, why you started as an organization to begin with, because that's what's going to help drive you forward.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. Alex, these have been some really fantastic insights on, you know, running your business or nonprofit. For anybody who's listening, do you have any wishes, desires, action that you want them to take in the next, I don't know, couple of days after listening to this?
Yeah, I think you should go download the 5 core functions and understand the framework. Whether you work in an organization or you're running an organization or you're a manager, it's one of those frameworks that applies to any organization to help you understand what you should do next. It also is a really great way to analyze the organization so that you're clear on what it needs. And David, you know, in our experience, what we see as the biggest challenge in business, and remember, we don't work with a lot of charities, but what we see as the biggest challenge in organizations is that there is inconsistent planning of what should be done. There's inconsistent analysis and prioritization of what can be done. And so if you consistently analyze and consistently prioritize and then execute, that analysis, prioritization, execution is what really changes companies and what changes any organization.
Absolutely. So we will have a show notes page. Thanks again for joining in, Alex. It's been great having you on the Nonprofit Digital Success Podcast. To everybody listening, if you want any of the links, resources, the transcript of what we were talking about, just head over to our podcast page at nonprofitdigitalsuccess.com. Click on this episode for all the details. And until next time, keep being successful.